I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome to Radio Times. 7 months after Superstorm Sandy bore down on the eastern seaboard, coastal communities in New Jersey have been picking up the pieces. Some towns like Manteloking were hit hard, while others in the more southern part of New Jersey largely escaped Sandy's wrath. Construction companies and builders, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, have been busy rebuilding houses and stores, boardwalks, and replenishing miles of beaches. Memorial Day is the official start of the summer tourist season, when visitors will be flocking to the shore. At least that's the hope. The tourism industry is worth billions of dollars in New Jersey and represents tens of thousands of jobs. We begin our conversation with Matt Doherty. He's the mayor of Bellmar, New Jersey, elected in 2010 after serving on the city council for this New Jersey shore town. He's also a financial advisor with Investors Bank. And Matt Doherty, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank. Good morning, and thank you for having me back on Radio Times.
Well, you're very welcome. And last time we talked was right after Superstorm Sandy, and Bellmar was hit pretty hard. Can you take us back to that time? How hard was it?
Sure. We were devastated by the storm surge from Superstorm Sandy on October 29th. It took us about 6 days to pump all the seawater that came in back into the Atlantic Ocean. We had to clean up a tremendous amount of debris, including 1.2 miles of boardwalk that was destroyed. Parts of it sent inland up to 6 or 7 city blocks.
Wow.
At the same time, we had, you know, about 40% of all the homes in town flooded, either flooded basements or flooded first floors. So we had a tremendous amount of debris from the homes as well. But we were very aggressive about our cleanup effort. And back on November 4th, we made a guarantee and a solemn promise to have the new boardwalk rebuilt in time for Memorial Day weekend this year, 2013. And I can tell you and your listeners that I'm proud to say that today we are delivering on that promise.
Meaning that the boardwalk is all done. I know you had this Buy the Boardwalk campaign, raised a lot of money that way.
Yeah, the boardwalk is completed. We're going to do our grand opening today. We'll be joined by Governor Chris Christie and also Senator Bob Menendez, two people whose leadership has been outstanding through this process. And we did create a vehicle for people to help called a Buy a Board campaign. It was different levels of sponsorship, the top level being a big kahuna at $5,000. And the lowest sponsorship was a beach bum at $25. And as long as we've had this in effect for the last 5 months, we've raised approximately $689,000 in purely private donations.
Oh, that's
which is
great.
Really remarkable, and just is a testament to the people in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and how generous they are to our town, and we thank them immensely.
How much, when all is tallied, how much to rebuild, replace the boardwalk?
We're probably in right now for somewhere close to $8 million. Of that will be reimbursable, about 75% will be reimbursable from FEMA. So that remaining amount is what the town will have to bear, minus the money from the Buy a Board campaign. So the Buy a Board campaign, it made a significant dent in how much we're going to have to repay for this brand-new boardwalk.
And can you hear the sound of people hammering in Bellmar, New Jersey as construction goes on?
Well, I'll tell you, on January 9th, we started the new boardwalk, and you could hear the sound of pile drivers. Now when you hear the sound of hammers, it's still on the homes of the residents in town. While we are excited today about our brand new boardwalk and the start of the summer season, we still remember and won't rest until all of our families are back home where they belong. And we still have a few dozen displaced families. Mm-hmm. Some of them are weeks away from getting home, some are months, and I can tell you some are going to be over a year before they're back in their home. So again, as excited as we are about today, you know, we always keep in our thoughts and we're concerned about making sure those families get back home where they belong.
You had mentioned storm surge. Have you been doing dune or beach replenishment in Bellmar?
Well, we are on a list from the Army Corps of Engineers for beach replenishment. We were on the list prior to Sandy, but the Congress never funded the program and the project. The funding for it came after Sandy. And, you know, looking at the devastation in our town, the area that had a wider beach was able to weather Sandy much better than the area that had a narrow beach. So without a doubt, if we would have had that beach replenishment in time for Sandy, there would have been a significant amount less damage in our community.
Looking ahead, though, do you know where you are on that list, or do you know when the beaches will be at least addressed, the beach problems?
The Army Corps of Engineers is going out to bid for the project in this month in May. I assume they'll award it sometime in June and begin July into August and September. It'll have no negative impact on the families that come and visit Belmar and the rest of the Jersey Shore, but it's something that's important to have in place as we go into the fall. And we typically get more serious storms in the fall and in the winter, whether it's another terrible storm like Sandy or just a nor'easter that comes on a more regular basis.
And how important are tourists, whether they're day trippers or people that rent houses in New Jersey, in Belmar, New Jersey, how important is that to your economy?
It's vitally important. We have about 140 small businesses in town that survive because of the tourists that come in the summer. In Belmar, just like the rest of the Jersey Shore, there are no large corporations. Outside of Atlantic City, most of the businesses are owned by families. So one bad summer, you know, one summer without a boardwalk or without tourists coming would be devastating to those businesses and obviously to those families, and it would deteriorate our community. So it's vitally important that people come back to the Jersey Shore this summer, patronize those businesses, and have a great experience once again.
Do you think some of the media coverage has could potentially scare off some of those visitors, those tourists?
You know, I think the media has done a tremendous job showing the storm and what happened to the storm. The reason why we were able to raise so much money from the Byboard campaign, I truly believe, is because it was pushed in the media. So we have a lot to be thankful for. Unfortunately, right now, they're still showing pictures from November and December. So even though the roller coaster is no longer in the water in Seaside, it's still a dramatic picture, so you'll see that being shown over again. You'll still see the picture of a house in Barnegat Bay, even though it's already been removed. So I think it's now time to turn the page somewhat, and you know we're going to use a day like today when we have this grand opening to showcase a new boardwalk. So while people still might have the memories fresh in their mind of the boardwalk being destroyed, well, now we need to start anew and start creating new memories with a brand new boardwalk, a brand new summer, and a place where you know middle-class families have come for decades to enjoy, and this year should be no different.
Well, I wish you the best of luck and a very sunny summer down there at Belmar, New Jersey. Mayor Daugherty, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
It is my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Again, Matt Daugherty, the mayor of Belmar, New Jersey. Joining us now and who's been sitting here in our Philadelphia studios is Thomas Harrington. He's an associate professor of ocean engineering in the Department of Civil, Environmental, and Ocean Engineering and the assistant director of the Center for Maritime Systems at Stevens Institute of Technology, and that's in Hoboken, New Jersey. And Thomas Harrington, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty. It was a pleasure.
Nice to have you here. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear from our New Jersey listeners. If there are those of you, and we know there are many of you who do go to the New Jersey Shore, we want to hear from you as well. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. As you look at the New Jersey shoreline, I guess from nose to tail, What parts of New Jersey are in a better state of recovery?
Well, when we look at the storm impacts itself, it was a classic hurricane. So the eye came across New Jersey and Brigantine, just north of Atlantic City. So Brigantine North, the coastal areas there suffered the most damage. Cape May, Atlantic counties, which were south of the eye, they saw beach erosion, they saw flooding from the bay. But overall, the beaches there are in much better shape. And, you know, as we speak, they're actually rebuilding those beaches. So so when we look at the state of the coast right now, it's really a tale of south to north. The farther south you go, the better those beaches are.
And is that pretty typical for a hurricane, that north of the hurricane or north of the eye tends to be harder hit?
Yeah, because the hurricane, if you watch the Weather Channel or any news station that shows a hurricane, it's a counterclockwise rotation. So north of the eye, all that water, all the storm surge is moving towards the coast at landfall. So you get higher storm surges, higher waves, more damage. South of the eye, the winds are actually blowing off the land towards the ocean, so it kind of sets the ocean down a little bit, and you see less damage.
I call this Superstorm Sandy. Is that hyping the storm, or was this a typical hurricane, or was it something different from that?
It was a typical hurricane, but it had some unique characteristics. And for instance, the left-hand turn it made on the way past New Jersey is quite rare and something we haven't seen in the record.
Went up to the Great Lakes, right?
And went into the Great Lakes. I mean, hurricanes, for their intensity, are pushed around by the high and low pressure systems in the atmosphere. So depending on where they are, it kind of directs the hurricane. And we were just unfortunate there's very strong high pressure north of us. And so as the hurricane tried to move on a typical track up the coast and out into the Atlantic Ocean, it was actually pushed inland. So that was unique about it. But I think in the terms of superstorm, I think not the storm itself, but the impacts the storm had. It hit the most densely populated coastline in the country. And so that alone created impacts that were much larger than many, many other storms.
We're also dealing, about a minute before our first break here, but we're also dealing as a country, but also I think as globally, with the fact that sea level rise is real, and it's happening, and it's having an impact.
That's true, and I tell my students you can debate why it's occurring, but we know from tide gauge records over the last century in Atlantic City, Sandy Hook, the Battery, that sea level in our area has been rising a foot a century. And we believe that will continue to occur over the next century. There's some forecasters that say it should get a higher rate of increase. So certainly sea level's changed, and that creates more of an impact when we have storm surges because the land hasn't risen, so the water level is higher.
And that's measurable. I mean, if you're talking about a foot over a century, that's not, you know, where you have to pull out your slide rule. You can use a yardstick.
Sure, and you know, it's 4 millimeters a year. It seems tiny, but over time, it has a very significant impact.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation, and we are talking about the New Jersey shoreline, and began with the mayor of Belmar, New Jersey, getting ready for the summer tourist season. And we're talking with Thomas Harrington. He's an associate professor of ocean engineering in the Department of Civil, Environmental, and Ocean Engineering, and the assistant director of the Center for Maritime Systems at the Stevens Institute of Technology. That's in Hoboken, New Jersey. And we want to hear from you, 1-888-477-9499. We're going to talk about beach replenishment after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania supports WHYY. Do your drinking habits cause problems in your personal or professional life? Do you drink to cope with stress? These may be signs of alcohol dependence. UPenn is conducting a research study using naltrexone, an FDA-approved medication for use in treating alcoholism. If you are 18 or older, have an alcohol problem, and want to reduce your drinking, you may qualify for the study. Details at 215-222-3200, extension 156.
This week in This American Life, the whole national conversation about climate change has been stuck for years now. Everybody knows where they stand, everybody's heard all the arguments before, but some new things are happening out there. Our pledge to you, a program about climate change, and we will not mention solar panels, Eskimo fishing villages, polar bears, polar ice caps, the word Greenland. That's this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
NBA stars spent years getting their game in top form, but off the court, sometimes they don't look like the champions they are. That's where stylist Kalila Williams-Webb comes in. She tells us how she helps pro athletes step up their fashion game. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. We're talking about local communities in New Jersey along the New Jersey shoreline, getting ready to rebuilding to get ready for the summer tourist season. And again, Thomas Harrington from the Stevens Institute of Technology is our guest. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Let's talk about engineered beaches or beach replenishment. I'm not sure what the correct word is, but nonetheless, the idea of building beaches or dunes.
Or dunes or both, actually. We like to think of both of them together as a combined system. The engineered beach, and that's a term that came out after Sandy, although FEMA's used it for years to describe a beach that's been man-made to provide protection against storm surges and wave attack. And these projects are typically designed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and they are optimized so that they have the right width and height and dune heights so that when a storm like Sandy comes along, the beaches will erode, but that storm surge and that wave attack won't reach the houses behind the beach. And so New Jersey's been very active over the past 20 years in building engineered beaches. And in many cases, those beaches save the communities behind them. So they are effective, and that's why you've heard New Jersey be very strong advocates on rebuilding the beaches.
And if you talk about an engineered beach, is it? And I've been to some of those New Jersey beaches, and some of those dunes are, you know, they're not mountains exactly, but they're wide and I think higher than what people are normally used to. Is that true?
That's true. Yeah. They have a certain height and volume so that they can provide that last line of defense. So should the beach erode during the storm event, that provides the extra sand and wave dissipation you would need. And also, they should be higher than the storm surge. So in Sandy, we saw storm surges of 9 to 10 feet, and that's above the beach level. So that's why they're so high. But, of course, they look bigger than the natural dunes, but in many cases we've built or bulldozed our natural dunes away, so.
And you need vegetation. I mean, you need grasses to sort of hold these dunes in place. Is that true? You need that?
You do. Over the long term, a dune's strength is increased by the root structure of the grasses and plants that grow in it. So it becomes more of a harder object for the storm surge and waves to interact with. We do say that, it's just not putting the sand there. You actually have to maintain that dune with vegetation.
Do you need jetties? I mean, what role do things like jetties and other structures that go into the ocean? I'm sure there's some controversy about this, but yeah.
Yeah, New Jersey has a long history of trying all kinds of structures. Yes. Kind of a laboratory in itself. We call them coastal groins in the engineering field. They're the structures that are built along the beach that you would kind of see as you sit on your blanket, and they're designed to slow the transport of sand in one direction. So for the most part, New Jersey, especially from Manasquan south, for instance, the sand is moving from north to south, and that's due to the wave energy that comes out of the northeast. And they're designed to slow that movement to keep the beach there. And they're effective if they always have sand in the system. But if you don't have sand, they're not going to be effective. And jetties, on the other hand, are to keep inlets open, so they become complete barriers to that transport.
Well, what's interesting, and I guess because we're talking about some people with private property, you've got the public wanting access to the beach, you've got the federal government spending billions of dollars, of taxpayer dollars, to replenish these beaches. And there's been, I would say some, I don't know if conflict is too strong a word, but certainly some disagreement about easements and who owns the beach and who gets to see the beach and who. Some homeowners have been upset because the dunes have actually blocked their view of the ocean. Can you sort of describe what the issues are here, and then we'll get to our callers?
Yeah, the issue is private property issues and private property rights, which, if you own a property, you should be concerned about those for sure. I will say that the public trust doctrine in New Jersey provides anybody access to the waterline on the beach. So the idea that nobody's allowed in front of a private property along the coast is not exactly correct, because you can get to the waterline and you're allowed to fish or even sunbathe in the intertidal zone. Mm-hmm. So the issue really is, in order for us to build these engineered beaches, the state of New Jersey and the federal government requires a construction easement, and they would like that easement forever.
That gives access to the beach, right, the easement?
Right. That gives them access to go across their property, to build the beach, to move equipment around that they need to move as they build the beach. And they want it forever because they have to maintain these projects so that every 4 to 6 years they'll come back in and replenish the beach and make sure that it has that protection level over a sustained period of time. So that's why the easements are required. But the homeowners view that as a somewhat of a taking. And the question is, what is the true value of that easement? And that's where the court cases have come in, where what are we really taking and what is its worth?
And that's Thomas Harrington from the Stevens Institute of Technology. We're talking about the New Jersey shoreline and efforts to rebuild after Superstorm or Hurricane Sandy, and talking about beach replenishment or engineered beaches, a very important part of the New Jersey shoreline. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We've got a lot of people from Beach Haven, including Janice. Janice, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning. I just want to say beach replenishment is a wonderful thing. I live on 41st Street in Brand Beach. They had a beach replenishment done last spring. It brought our dunes up to 22 feet in height, extended our beach way further out. After Superstorm Sandy, our beach was cut back, I'd say, by 3/4. And thank goodness we're getting ready to start to repair the damage from Sandy, I believe, starting next week. So I have to say beach replenishment is a wonderful thing. The section of our town that had it done only had Back Bay flooding. Where the beach replenishment ended, about 57th, 58th Street on our island, that's where the ocean actually came up over the old existing dune lines and created way worse problems.
Well, that's interesting, Janice. I mean, a real-life experiment, I guess, Thomas, on how these engineered beaches can work.
Yeah, and Long Beach Island was a great example for us in our field to look at and say, hey, these projects do work. And we saw that in Surf City, in Harvey Cedars, and Beach Haven, as the caller mentioned, that where these projects were in place, we didn't see the damage along the ocean front that we saw in other areas of that community.
And she mentioned the back front, or the bay front.
Yeah, the back bay, and that's something I think the state and needs to look at it much closer. The surge that comes in the bay, it fills up the bays with the water, and our infrastructure back there is so low comparative to the ocean front that the water does overtop the bulkheads, it does get into the streets, and that's where we have flooding issues.
Let me see what looks like Kurt from Beach Haven has to say. Kurt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
How you doing? I'm also a resident of LBI, and although the beach replenishment, it did work, and it definitely made a huge difference. There was clear lines from where they stopped replenishing it, but it cost the towns millions of dollars to do it each year. Every time there's a storm, it seems to take away a lot of what they filled up, and I was just wondering if, you know, where's the sustainability, and I can take comments off the air.
Thanks, Kurt, for the call to Radio Times, and obviously talking about something that has to happen on a fairly constant basis, and he's wondering about, is this a sustainable way of preserving the shoreline?
Yeah, that's a very astute observation. You know, just putting sand on the beach doesn't stop the erosion problem. The erosion problem is always there, and it results from a lack of natural supply. So in a sense, we are creating that natural supply by building the beaches, and it does cost money. There's a maintenance issue to that. You know, financially, New Jersey has proceeded with large-scale beach renourishment because of the tourism revenue the coast brings in. So in New Jersey, it is a cost-effective means. And it is true the cities have to put in a percentage and the state puts in a percentage, but the majority comes from the federal government. So financially, it is solvent right now. And I'm not saying that it may be the solution in all coastlines, but for New Jersey, it seems to be the best way to protect our communities in the long term and preserve the tourism economy.
Kurt, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I'm thinking about the next 100 years, as you said, about a foot of sea level rise in the last 100 years, and it may be accelerated looking forward. I mean, is there any way to build beaches or bulkheads or groins that would prevent an ocean that was 1 foot higher from rolling over some of these barrier islands?
Yeah, and we are doing that. As a matter of fact, the beach designs that are being built now include sea level rise over longer terms.
Really?
So these projects usually last 50 years. So in those 50 years, each time they're renourished, they get a little higher, a little wider, which is fine for the oceanfront. The real pressure, again, is on the bay shorelines where we're not there's no natural environment. In most places, not a natural environment. It's a bulkhead and a street end and a house. And
right.
So there we have an issue of how can we sustain a resilient coastal community that will experience flooding from the back bay areas. And that's something, that the state is interested in looking at in detail now, a lot of research on how do we create sustainable coastal communities under these sea level rise pressures. And the solution's not there yet,
right.
But I think that's being addressed at this time.
Because you couldn't put dunes there, right? I mean, that wouldn't really work, would it?
No, the natural features that used to be there are marshes, marshlands and bayshore coast, tiny little pocket beaches. We are looking at a concept they call living shorelines, which is an adaptation of the built environment to recreate the natural features that have been lost. And we think that that does two things for us. Once it creates the habitat and the way to dissipate energy in the natural environment,
right.
And also provides a lot more friction to the storm surge that tries to enter the bays. So we would see a reduction in the storm surge. So that's something that we're trying to look at.
Should we think marshes then when you say something like that, like rebuilding the marshes?
Yeah, the marshes are under tremendous pressure from sea level rise. And so the our ability to maintain those features in the coastal environment are really important in the future.
Let me get Kitty, also from Beach Haven. Kitty, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Hi, Beach Haven, monopolizing the conversation.
That's okay.
My husband and I stayed through the storm, and we saw, most of the – I live in Beach Haven, and almost every beach south of us was compromised or breached by the ocean, and the bay met the ocean almost everywhere one block south of me to – Wow. End of Holgate. Now, the town has worked very hard to push the sand up, which I know is just acting as a berm and isn't really a dune. My street, luckily, as I said, still has some vegetation on it. But after seeing all of this, and they've put new walkways in with fencing, it's going to be difficult for some people to get to the beach this summer because it's quite high. My mom, any elderly or anyone with a disability, but we all just realize it's just the way it's going to be this summer until the replenishment starts. But I noticed the other day one of my neighbors, who is an oceanfront owner, pushing the sand off of his dune with a snow shovel so that he could make his own walkway, and he cleared out an entire area in front of his home. He has, he still has a view of the water,
right.
But he made himself a walkway down to the beach, cut an opening through the dune fencing that the town has put up. And it was so harsh to see it because it's just so disrespectful of everyone who's lost so much so he could, maximize his view and his access. And I just think this summer we have to remember that it's going to be inconvenient, but we all need to walk around and use the public walkways to the beach. And just to realize the value of our system,
sure.
And how hard,
sure.
Everybody's worked.
Well, Kitty, I have to say, Thomas had a physical reaction when you described, yeah. what your neighbor had done shoveling through a dune.
Player. There are very stringent regulations in the New Jersey Coastal Zone Management Rules that prohibit any modification of a dune, and certainly that's something we don't want to see happen. Like we said, the vegetation is important for the strength and integrity of that dune. Even little breaks in the dune we found in Sandy became conduits for the storm surge to get through. So, we're trying to work with communities now to do the walkovers, and I do understand the caller's point that it's hard for some people to get over those dunes and the walkovers, but that's much better than having a break in the dune to put a path through, because they become the areas that the storm surge is going to get through. And once it breaches the dune line, now you're into the community, and that's what we want to prevent. And so even communities that have street-end walkways, we're trying to advise them to build a dune in front of that So we learned for sure in Sandy the dune was a critical element in preventing surge damage during Sandy.
Kitty, thanks for the call. Let's see what Ellen from Swarthmore has to say. Ellen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I summer in Avalon, which is a great example of the dune system being built over many, many years and how it works. And I get frustrated when I hear people from LBI, especially the northern tip, and I read about, you know, the dunes blocking the ocean view. Simply put your living room on the upper floor of your house, and you can have your fabulous ocean view. In Avalon, it's some of the most expensive real estate in the entire country. Everyone has accepted the dunes as a fact of life, and we deal with it. So it's frustrating for me, and I'm wondering if public opinion is starting to sway away from the private property aspect and really over to more of the greater good. LBI needs to build some significant dunes and basically just take their lumps. And at the end of the day, we're all going to be better because the beach will still be there.
Well, Ellen, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Do you think, Thomas, that the public opinion is starting to shift? And we mentioned some of these public-private arguments.
I think so. And one of the reasons is that we are seeing a lot of oceanfront homeowners who had refused to give easements in the past have come forward and said, yes, it's a good idea to build these beaches and dunes, and I'm willing to give you an easement. There's still holdouts, and the state's working very hard to get the easements they need to build these projects. But there, you know, people come to the shore for different reasons, and the view is one of them, and so it's been a flashpoint issue for a long time. I will say, though, and the caller from or Summers in Avalon, what we've seen, very interestingly, as homes are rebuilt in these areas that have big dunes, they do exactly what she said. Instead of having one unit on top of another, they're side by side, so you have two or three floors, and you can see over that dune. So over time, maybe the issue goes away by the way we build our homes.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye to you, but we've been talking about the effect of Sandy on human beings, and I'm wondering about its effect on wildlife, whether wildlife knows how to recover from some of these big storms. And by that, I mean, obviously, vegetation, but birds and other critters.
Yeah, I think the vegetation or the plants is something we have to wait and see. I mean, the saltwater intrusion to where we didn't have saltwater. Certainly some plant species can't handle salt water, so that's something we have to see. From the animals' perspective, you know, right away we were really concerned about the horseshoe crab nesting areas along the Delaware Bayshore. The beaches were gone. It's a huge, important fishery for the migratory birds that come through Cape May County. So the state of New Jersey, with other organizations like the American Littoral Society, rebuilt those beaches right away so that they would be there for the horseshoe crabs and the migratory birds, and it was a great success. So we have to think about the natural environment as well as the built environment. And we want to sustain why we all come to the coast.
Well, Thomas Harrington, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, driving down from northern New Jersey to join us here in our Philadelphia studios. Thanks
very
much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You're very welcome. He's from the Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. We're going to be talking about Delaware after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Whether you're gripping a golf club, turning a key, or playing piano, hands make it happen. And when hands need help, St. Mary offers a new way. Appointments with hand specialists available in 2 business days. Fellowship-trained doctors treat hand injuries and chronic conditions, offering advances in therapy, rehabilitation, and minimally invasive surgery. Physician referrals at 215-710-5888 or stmaryhealthcare.org/hand. Supporting WHYY, St. Mary Medical Center in Langhorne. It's your health. Expect more.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jennifer Gilmore. Her new novel, The Mothers, is based on the experiences she and her husband had trying to adopt a baby. They gave up on international adoption and pursued open adoption in the U.S., but ran into all kinds of obstacles as well as a scam or two. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll have the latest from Oklahoma as residents of Moore and surrounding communities deal with the aftermath of their most recent tornado. Also, cultural commentator Torre on the significance of Prince to Generation X. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We just got a checkup on the New Jersey shoreline after Superstorm Sandy. Now we want to check in on the first date, and we have Colin O'Mara on the line. He's Secretary of the Environment and Energy for Delaware under Governor Jack Markell. And nice to have you back with us on Radio Times, Colin.
No, Marty, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, again, we want to hear from listeners who perhaps live in Delaware or go to some of the Delaware tourist or shore communities. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Colin, we talked to you shortly after Sandy blew through Delaware. How hard hit was Delaware?
We did have damage. We lost, you know, several hundred thousand cubic yards of sand on our dune systems on the ocean side. We had a lot of flooding on in the Inland Bays community as the storm tracked north of us. And most of the damage actually came from the winds actually coming from the backside of the storm and pushing water into our coastal communities. The damage was in the tens of millions. So we were obviously spared compared to a lot of places. And fortunately, the dune systems did their job. I mean, they really did protect the ocean communities, and we're in the process of restoring them right now. But they did prevent some of the more catastrophic damage we saw in some other places.
In fact, Delaware has been working on replenishing or building up beaches for years now.
No, absolutely. And we just announced with Governor Markell and Senator Carper and Senator Coons and our Congressman John Carney another $30 million investment. And because we see the return on that investment being 30-40 times greater than the cost of the project. And in this case, it's federal money, so it's even greater return to the state.
I hear you chuckling as you say federal money. What, money that people in Delaware specifically don't have to worry about?
Normally there's a cost share program. So when we did the last big round of renourishment in 2011, in 2012, there's a 30% cost share. But in this case, because the damage was related to Sandy, it was entirely federally funded.
Wow.
Which allows us to use state dollars to then work on some of the other beaches that don't qualify for the federal program, things in the Delaware Bay region, areas that don't meet the fairly strict cost-benefit test that the Army Corps has on their program.
We were talking about replenishing beaches in New Jersey, and now we're talking about Delaware. Is beach replenishment or engineered beaches, is that the same no matter where you are? Or does it have to be kind of rejiggered for a particular location?
I mean, you do have to take into account kind of the specifics of the site. And so there's places where we're actually going to be changing the design profile a little bit. The area around the Indian River Inlet Bridge, which is kind of the bridge that connects like Dewey Beach, Delaware, down to like Bethany, Delaware, as you go across the Indian River Inlet. That's going to be much bigger and wider because the kind of the hydrodynamics have changed a little bit over time, and we need a bigger system to protect. I mean, we in Delaware believe that the sand solutions are more effective than the hard engineered seawalls and things like that you see some other places, because you end up losing the sand completely. The wall will basically become the new border with the water, and it doesn't have as much of a absorption ability. You want the dynamic nature of the sand that can actually absorb the energy, prevent the damage further inland, and it's also obviously a much better recreational asset than a bunch of seawalls. So it does have to be site specific, but for Delaware, the preference tends to be a beach and a living shoreline solution or a sand solution.
Where does the Army Corps get all that sand?
For Delaware, there's actually fairly large sand shoals just right off the coast. And so we've been able to, over the years, kind of time different, you know, dredging projects and others to use appropriate material for some of these kinds of work. And a lot of it's actually the same sand so as a storm might push out to sea, wave action will bring a lot of it back naturally. And then you're kind of supplementing that with additional sand a little further off the coast of the bay.
We were talking again about New Jersey and some of the bay and how communities along the bay were affected differently from those communities that were right along the ocean shoreline. I'm wondering, focusing on Delaware Bay, some of the challenges in Delaware in dealing with some of the issues there.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, because of the leadership of a former governor, Russell Peterson, we have the Coastal Zone Act that really prevents kind of heavy industry in our coastal, in our bay coastal areas, and actually the ocean coast as well. But the so we have a system of more than 100,000 acres of tidal wetlands that provide incredible storm resilience protection. They are able to, I mean, the average acre of these wetlands can hold between 300,000 and a gallon and a million gallons of water. And so we didn't see the communities getting flooded out further inland because they had this basically this bladder that was able to handle most of the rainwater as it was pouring down. Some of the other communities that are right on the bay did see more damage. There was some a little more back bay flooding and and some damage from into the dunes. And there's some structures that were damaged and a couple of houses that were destroyed that were that just weren't able to withstand the force of the storm. But fortunately, because of that system, I mean, a lot of the wildlife habitat was protected. Our horseshoe crabs this year are actually spawning in great numbers as we speak. The red knot migration has been strong, you know, except for a few pesky peregrines that keep, you know, chasing things out of the bay. But you know, overall, I mean, the system seems to be bouncing back. Our long-term play, though, is that we need to make some of the coastal impoundments more resilient. And so we're working with Interior to move some of them further inland as we see more storms and sea level rise. So those diverse habitats that make Delaware Bay one of the greatest kind of ecological treasures in the country, make sure that it can withstand these kind of systems in the future.
And how do you move that inland? How does that work?
So it's actually physical construction. So we have a series of impoundments that create both freshwater impoundments for different types of waterfowl and shorebirds that are in the daughter wildlife areas and some private lands. And we're actually going to be trying to move them further inland and a little more upland and kind of recreate some of these systems so you still have a good balance of different types of habitat for different types of species.
And that's Colin O'Mara. He's the Secretary of the Environment and Energy for Delaware under Governor Jack Markell. We called out to him. We spent the first portion of the show today talking about New Jersey, but we know many people not only live in Delaware but enjoy the beaches of Delaware, and we wanted to get an update on Delaware's post-Sandy. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Having lived in Delaware, Colin, I know it's a very flat state, and we also know that sea level rise is an issue for a lot of coastal communities, about a foot of sea level rise in the last century. Is Delaware in any way more vulnerable than other states because it's so low-lying?
Yeah, so Delaware has the lowest lying elevation in the country, about 60 feet above, is average, about 60 feet above sea level. And so, you know, a one-foot rise or even a two-foot rise could impact, you know, several percent of the state's land mass. We've actually done more extensive modeling of various sea level rise scenarios than any state in the country, looking at these exact questions, looking at impacts on roads and communities and natural infrastructure and wastewater systems and cemeteries and any other piece of infrastructure you can think of. We've modeled it to see where those impacts are. And the good thing is that a lot of the same investments that could be made to protect against sea level rise are the exact same investments that make us more protected during these kind of coastal storms. Mm. And so we're fixing dikes right now in the northern part of the state. We're repairing wetlands and enhancing wetlands and adding additional settlement to make wetlands more resilient in the bay and also down in the inland bays. Doing the beach nourishment work and all, and trying to, you know, replace septic systems that are in flood-prone areas, putting them on the central sewer systems. So we're taking a series of actions across the state to make us much more resilient for, you know, what lies ahead.
But do you feel like you're in a race against time?
Yes.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, no one anticipated the frequency and the intensity of some of these storms the last few years. And if this is the new normal, the same, like I said, the same exact investments are going that we need to make to protect ourselves against these storms will serve us very well in the decades ahead as we see accelerating rates of sea level.
But do you think Delaware is being more proactive on this issue in part because it's such a low-lying state?
Absolutely. I mean, with a meter and a half of sea level rise, which is a kind of a moderate estimate right now based on some of the best science in the country and around the world, and knowing that the rates of acceleration have been higher in this part of the region, this part of the country, I mean, we could lose as much as 11% of the land mass of the state.
Wow.
I mean, that's, you know, 20,000 households and, you know, 20 to 30,000 households. And so, I mean, we really need to take these states because it's really about the, you know, the long-term sustainability of, you know, kind of the very things that make Delaware one of the greatest places to live in the country.
Do you think we love our beaches too much?
I think they are the economic driver of our coastal economy. And so we have, you know, multi-billion-dollar economy. We want everyone to visit Delaware and have a great experience. I think we just need to be thoughtful about how that system is also protection. It's not just a recreational asset. And so, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there are places where the economics aren't going to work. And the economics of the ocean coast are very, very strong. I mean, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar economy. It supports tens of thousands of jobs. It's really, you know, one of the marquee destinations on the East Coast. But there's other places where, you know, there's fewer residents and things like that, where we just have to have some, you know, very tough conversations. But we want to make sure we go into those conversations with the best science in the country and the best economics, so we can have an honest conversation instead of, you know, getting wrapped up in politics or emotion. We need to have, you know, a conversation based on data and what really makes the most sense for the state, given the scarce resources that we all are trying to live within.
So a conversation about how you build houses or what the infrastructure looks like. You talked about sewer systems. I mean, it doesn't get more basic than that.
No, exactly. I mean, wells.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say exactly. I mean, it's the basic amenities. So, I mean, if there's a community that's entirely being served by drinking water wells, and you're having additional saltwater intrusion into those that's contaminating the drinking water, you know, it's a basic necessity, and it makes a community very, you know, obviously hard to live in. Same thing with septic systems that are being flooded out regularly, causing both seepage into the groundwater and potentially into the surface water, while at the same time not providing the service that's needed for the residents. So
sure.
We're really trying to think through this on a very common sense way. And there's some places where it might not make sense to build in the future. Other places you can elevate. Other places might need additional infrastructure. And the key is just making sure that we're having a very transparent conversation about those choices, because they all have different price tags attached to them. And that, you know, local folks should have the information to know when they're buying a property or when they're looking at different choices, kind of what the state of the science is, so they can make the most informed decision for their family.
But do you think public opinion is beginning to shift, whether you call it global warming or climate change, but the fact, literally, I sound like Joe Biden from Delaware, literally, the fact that in the last century we've got a foot of sea level rise, that has become a kind of a wake-up call.
Yeah, and I frankly think that the combination of the droughts, the intense heat in the summers, and then combined with the storms in the fall, I think that, you know, that what the models have been predicting for years are now becoming, you know, fairly commonplace, and I think folks are recognizing that. I think there's still folks that will question, you know, kind of rates of acceleration and, you know, kind of timelines and things like that, but there seems to be, you know, less and less debate over the overarching science, which is, from my point of view, you know, completely overwhelming. I mean, the global consensus around this is greater than almost any other, you know, scientific area outside things that are already kind of codified as law. So,
but it's hard. I mean, as we know, and I would include myself in this as well, it's sometimes just hard to change behavior, hard to change how one thinks about how one lives one's life.
Absolutely. And our goal is to try to make it as painless as possible, but at the same time as with as much information as we possibly can provide. I mean, there's obviously a very clear role for government in a lot of these things, mm-hmm. but a lot of it's community by community. And one of the things we did, and it's a very basic effort, but we worked with every local community in the state to look at their floodplain and drainage standards. Not the sexiest stuff for government. You know, a lot of folks don't want to talk about it, but, you know, how do we make sure that folks are building, you know, safe? How do we make sure that when repairs are done or renovations, things like that, they're done in a way that makes the property, you know, more resilient? And we had a great amount of cooperation and interest, because at the end of the day, the local officials or the local residents are the ones that have to deal with the consequences after the fact. And so empowering folks with that information and letting them kind of use it to improve their community, we've seen just great partnerships up and down the state and great response to that.
Let me get Rick to join a conversation. And Rick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you switched over to concentrating on the Delaware State mm-hmm. Bay region, but the gentleman had just finished speaking about the New Jersey-Delaware Bay area that sustained some damage from Hurricane Sandy. And I agree with him partly about how the marshes protect flooding and all, but I've been in my home 5 years. I'm a veteran on disability retirement. I've been through three federally declared storm flood disasters since I've been here. My crawl space fills up in my home like a swimming pool. Mm-hmm. It was built in the 50s, and it's only like a block high. There's a very high water table here, and there's wetland deciduous forest right at the end of the street, and then the marsh starts like 300 feet into that forest. I've been trying for several years.
Rick, let me just jump in here, only because we only have a minute and a half before the whole show is over. Can you just state what your question is?
Yes, I've been trying to get a hazard mitigation grant to elevate my home, and I'm having a really hard time. And there are some other neighbors that have flooding issues in the area, too. So I'm not sure that they're aware of just how much storm flooding we are getting inland here. I'm a mile in from the bay.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not sure if Colin O'Mara can exactly answer your question. I don't know if you could or not, Colin.
Yeah, typically in situations like yours, working with both the local government or even the state government that serves as the liaison with FEMA, there are a series of FEMA programs that can help provide some small grants and things like that, assuming the community is kind of in the flood protection program. But we can work with Marty offline to get you that information for your state.
Okay, that would be great. And Rick, if hang on the line, and we'll try to get you some information and hopefully help you out there. Colin, we're almost out of time here, but looking ahead, do you enjoy the Delaware beaches as well? I mean, are you a partaker of those beaches?
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate to live in different parts of the country, and I love Delaware. I think everyone listening right now should visit Delaware this summer. I think they should not just the beaches, but the Bayshore in Delaware is incredible. The Nanticoke River is incredible. I mean, there's more to do in these 100 miles than almost any other stretch of 100 miles in the country.
Well,
and so I just encourage everyone to explore the incredible natural resources that this little state has to offer.
Well, you're not only a good spokesperson for your state, you're also the Secretary of the Environment and Energy for Delaware. Colin O'Mara, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Marty.
Times. And we also talked with Matt Doherty, the mayor of Belmar, New Jersey, and with Thomas Harrington from the Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. This was our roundup of the short lines here in the New Jersey and Delaware areas. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thanks for those phone calls, and thanks for joining us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.